Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on, another hot summer afternoon, but that's the way it is. Looked like a little rain early this morning. I got out and wanted to try to beat the heat, get a couple of things done, and started sprinkling. I put some things out to catch the rain, and of course that stopped it. So it's turned out to be another nice, hot summer day, so hope everybody doing well here on this second day of July. A reminder again that we will have a show tomorrow, but that will be it for the week because we're getting Thursday and Friday off for the holiday for the 4th of July.
Yeah, hopefully weather cooperates for everybody's 4th of July festivities. Thursday night, the local fireworks shows, and then of course you have folks probably doing some traveling on the weekend as well. Although the university opened on Friday, a lot of folks have work on Friday as well. But we are off for a nice little 4-day weekend here on The Drive. We will be back on Monday, and once we're back on Monday, it's just a week until SEC Media Days. Amazing to think
about that.
Next week, we'll do a full week of shows. The following week, starting Monday, July 15th, I will be in Dallas broadcasting live from the first Texas edition of SEC Media Days, with Texas and Oklahoma joining the league. Of course, they officially joined the league yesterday as part of big celebrations at both on both campuses and in both communities. The last day of the Longhorn Network, I believe, also true. I believe they pulled the plug on the Longhorn Network officially on the 31st with Texas joining the league.
I thought I read that they were going to renew the Longhorn Network.
I thought that the SEC was. I
saw this while we were down on the Gulf last week. I saw a note that Texas was continuing the Longhorn Network. Maybe that was. I did not read the story.
So I believe the Longhorn Network will lose all of its cable coverage. They might still continue it as an ESPN Plus channel,
or they might fold it into an ESPN Plus. But
I believe the Longhorn Network, there are parts of the country
relaunching as a free streaming service. But I'm surprised that they're even. Well, I guess that's not quite. Obviously, it won't be nearly to the extent they won't be able to when they were a cable. Option,
right? That launched the Longhorn Network as a cable network launched in August of 2011 and aired quite a bit of Texas athletics, Big 12 athletics. It was the first ESPN deal exclusively with a college or university athletic department to give them their own national network, and it's folding into they're ceasing operations on that with Texas joining the SEC, but they will still have a Texas branded streaming platform on ESPN Plus, but far less visible than
I don't think they're going to be able to do some of the things that they used to do. They would have pre and post game shows and things like that. I'm not sure that they will continue that. They'll have an awful lot of things available. It's cool if you're a Texas fan that you're getting extra things. And it does really, I've heard multiple people talking about this, Dan. It really does seem that the SEC has sort of bent a little bit welcoming Texas. They have gone, it appears that the SEC is much is much happier to with the acquisition of Texas than they have been with anybody else. It seems like you look at the schedule that Texas got. Other schools, when the Longhorn Network was trying to figure out what they could do, there were some other schools that didn't feel that was fair. I know in the Big 12 they didn't like it, but there'd been some grumbling. A&M folks had said, well, good, this is going to be the end of that type thing. And the SEC has said, no, not necessarily.
I will disagree with. I don't think the SEC deliberately gave Texas an easy schedule to welcome them to the conference. I don't think the SEC was thinking about that 2 years ago when they outlined who everybody was going to play. Because one of the things, one of the reasons we think Texas's schedule is so easy is because they're playing that road game in Dallas against Oklahoma. The SEC's got nothing to do with that. The Red River rivalry has been something they're doing in Dallas yearly. Now, could they have given Texas a tougher road opponent among their other three?
Well, I mean, they travel outside the state of Texas in conference
twice. They play Vanderbilt,
Arkansas, and Nashville.
Yes, they could have
Fayetteville and Nashville.
You could argue that they could have given Texas a tougher road game of the other three road games,
right?
Vanderbilt, Arkansas, and Texas A&M. There could be although even at Auburn, we're treating Texas A&M as one of the two toughest games on the home slate this year. I mean, it's still a team that I think people perceive as a top half of the SEC type of opponent. But you're right. It is clear the SEC is extremely proud of this acquisition. They're making a bigger deal. I mean, the recent comparison would be the addition of Texas A&M and Missouri. And this is a far bigger deal.
Oh, it is. But it doesn't.
And it probably should be.
But it doesn't. You know, it's funny to me, though. It doesn't seem that it's as big a deal that Oklahoma is coming into the SEC as it does Texas. And whose program is more storied, Oklahoma or Texas?
I would think that it feels like.
The way they're being treated.
Oklahoma's had more success. I think people would think of Texas as the program with the bigger fan base. Like I think that's where the two would split off. Like I think Oklahoma has as a football program, Oklahoma has more conference titles,
more
national championships,
yes.
A lot more wins over the last 25 years. Like those things are all true. I think people perceive Texas as one of those, because that's also like you could say the same thing about like Oregon versus USC. Like Oregon's had more success over the last 25 years. Yeah, winning football games.
But I mean, Oklahoma all time.
You're right.
Still well ahead of Texas.
But it's not like just recency. No, it's not. It's not that Oklahoma is just. Although a lot of Oklahoma successes.
I feel like it's just the. It is the numbers. It is like what Florida means. Yep. That's what Texas means. It is the flag bearer for the state of Texas, and the state of Texas is much more important to the SEC than the state of Oklahoma.
And I'm sure there are metrics telling you that the number of Texas fans makes them a highly significant acquisition, even maybe compared to Oklahoma fans out there. Like as a program, but your point about, because I think the SEC, I mean, the SEC has also made a pretty big deal of Oklahoma coming in. But your point about this.
Did the SEC, maybe it's because we were on the way and coming back, but it seemed like the SEC carried an awful lot more of Texas celebration and welcoming Texas into the SEC than they did Oklahoma.
Now, I wasn't paying too much attention to like how the conference
it's like,
was doing.
I flipped it, on the SEC network, and that's pretty much all it was. It felt like it's the Welcome Texas show.
I do wonder, too, if Oklahoma had just been to the playoff, and if they were coming into the season, but if Oklahoma had just been to the playoff, and they were coming into the season as a consensus top three or top five team this year, I do wonder if the way the SEC were promoting this upcoming season would be a little bit different. But when Texas is projected to go 10-2 or 11-1, according to a lot of these people, now that doesn't always mean Texas is going to do that.
No.
Texas has quite a few seasons where they're projected to win 10 or more games, and that's not the way it plans out. But I do think that maybe because the perception is that Texas is this team about to have this big season, just had the playoff appearance, and they've got a guy that we think will be, I think he's going to be, I think you said this earlier in the week, right? We think he's going to be the preseason first team all-conference quarterback Quinn Ewers. Like, I do wonder if that has something to do with it, the fact that at the moment, even though Oklahoma won 10 games last year and beat Texas last year and has more success over the last 10 or 20 or 40 years. I think there's a perception at the moment that Texas is the hotter program, just based entirely on last year. Last year and what they people and, think and they're going to do this.
All right, so Doug yesterday, I was on with Doug yesterday, and he asked something, and I think he may be right. He was wondering, why is that perception so high for Texas? Is it because they won 10 games, they made it to the playoff last year, or is it more because they went into Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama pretty handily?
It helps.
I think that may be as big a reason as anything that that's the game everybody watched, and that's the game that has everybody going, they're back, they're great, they're going to win it all.
Bill, if Texas hadn't won at Alabama last year,
they wouldn't have been in the playoff.
We were speculating that Georgia might have gotten their spot in the playoff instead, because Georgia was sitting there as a 12-1 team with one loss to Alabama on a neutral site. It would have been very easy for the committee to take that team over even a 12-1 Big 12 champion that didn't have a signature win. But because it was Texas and because they won in Tuscaloosa, I think it would have been really difficult to leave Texas out and take Alabama and Georgia instead. So you're right. I think that the win over Alabama, I think probably legitimized a season that otherwise, like if Texas had had the exact same season last year, but they won in Starkville instead of in Tuscaloosa. Everything else is the same, but the road game was in Starkville.
No, they wouldn't be nearly.
I'm not sure they would have made the playoff, and I think people would have looked at a Texas team that has a 12-1 season with a win in Starkville. They get wiped out in the playoff game by Washington. I think people think, oh, well, that's the bursting of the bubble. So maybe the win over Alabama, endures in people's minds as another reason. Although I also think Texas bringing back so much from that playoff team also plays a role in why people are exceptionally high.
But if Texas had brought back that much from a playoff team that didn't really win a big ball game,
you're right.
People wouldn't have thought as much about the talent coming back.
And I think there probably are still some people that think just wait till Georgia sees Texas and we'll have a real sense of whether or not Texas is built to this Texas team is built to hang with the best teams in the SEC. I guess you get that kind of early they're not the best teams in the SEC, but Oklahoma opening league
Oklahoma's
play.
Oklahoma's got Tennessee and Auburn back to back.
Yeah. Who may not be,
but it's as I heard somebody say, Texas doesn't have a back to back. Texas doesn't play back to back teams that tough all year long. But I mean, that's really you're getting proof of playing in the SEC when you're hosting Tennessee and traveling to Auburn the next week.
To me, the biggest break on Texas's schedule, though, because if that game were at Oklahoma, I'm not sure I would look at it and say, oh, man, Texas road games would be Oklahoma and A&M, which are just as tough as Auburn's two toughest home games.
Well, and that's what the schedule says. Schedule says road game against Oklahoma in Dallas.
Yes.
Where they split the crowd, supposedly, but it's always going to be.
It would be.
It's there in Texas.
It would be like if Auburn were playing. Like if the Georgia game were in Columbus, like if they were doing, like if you know what I mean, like if it was a road game, like this year's game.
Instead
of being played in that, something like that. But I mean, I guess they have experimented with neutral sites and some of Auburn's big rivals before. But no, I think that's where the perception of, what a soft or especially for a first year in the conference.
I'll put it this way: it's a welcoming schedule.
Sure.
For the SEC, and the thing is, they get to play it 2 years in a row.
Yes, they do.
They get four road games.
Yes, the three.
And
teams.
They only get three games at home in Arlington. The fourth home game is Oklahoma and Dallas.
Three games in Austin. You've got Vandy, Arkansas, and A&M would be the games in Austin, Oklahoma, and Dallas, and then four games on the road in the SEC in 25, including. In Athens, because Georgia will be playing.
That's right.
Georgia will be playing in Austin in 2024 in one of the bigger games. Georgia drawing Alabama and Texas. year one. I mean, that's a. Yeah. I mean, thanks for
being so good the last couple of years, Georgia.
Now here's the good news. I think that Georgia still appears to be considerably better than everyone else on the schedule.
They do.
And if they were to go 10-2 and only drop games to Texas and Alabama, they probably would get another shot at those teams in the postseason. Would be my guess. So it's still, I mean, they still have to take care of business, but it's almost like it would be a luxury for Georgia to take either the Alabama game or the Texas game, because if you go 10-2 and you drop those two games, you're still almost assured. I mean, that still might get you in the SEC play. We'll see. I wonder if six and two.
Yeah, it might not get you in the SEC championship game.
6-2 is a question of whether or not that would, but I imagine a 10-2, especially a 10-2 team that starts the year.
I think a 10-2 with losses to those two, yeah, I think that's going to get you in.
And if the perception is that you were one of the four or five best teams based mm-hmm. on how the season started, I mean, I think Georgia, I mean, maybe not even four or five. I could see Georgia versus Ohio State being the big debate for who's number one in preseason polls. Like I think those are probably your top two teams according to most of the country. So yeah, that's going to be something to figure out. But that's can't wait to see how things get started. But Texas and Oklahoma now, I guess this is their first full day in the SEC as Bill Cameron gets the Bill Cameron gets an important call here in hour number one. So we may step aside. Tell you what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. We're going to tell you about the phone numbers, 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. You've got the text box, 334-564-1840, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Big shout out to Derek and everybody at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Southeastern Industrial Contractors also sponsors the podcast, available however you get your podcast. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more. This is The Drive.
Attention large property owners and adventure seekers.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Bill Cameron will be back momentarily. Had to step aside for a phone call, but he will be. I think should be joining us shortly as we usually have Andy Burcham on Tuesdays. I know Andy's vacation is continuing, but Andy will be able to tell us about his trip to, I'm going to let Andy talk about it entirely. I'm not going to disclose anything about where Andy went. I think I let something slip on a previous edition of the show. So I'm going to say when we talk to Andy Burcham again, maybe next week, if not, might cross paths at SEC Media Days. But we'll hear from Andy Burcham soon about his international trip. And I think he acknowledged that it was going to be an international trip, and then just didn't want to talk too much about it beforehand. So we'll hear from Andy pretty soon. Let's see. I guess the big stories. You've got a rare July coaching change in Division I college football. Pretty prominent name too, Blake Anderson, former Arkansas State coach, who'd been a successful coach at Arkansas State in 7 seasons, winning 51 games. If you remember, he brought Arkansas State to Georgia a couple of weeks after his wife passed away, and the Georgia fans made a big tribute of honoring Blake Anderson and his family after the personal tragedy. Utah State announcing earlier today that Brian Anderson Blake Anderson has been informed of Utah State's intent to fire him after an external investigation of alleged noncompliance of Title IX policies that required full and timely reporting of disclosures of sexual misconduct, including domestic violence, unquote. There was an investigation taken in spring 2023 that violated. Apparently, they found that, in the investigation that Coach Anderson violated both his employment agreement and university policy. Unquote. And there's more legalese in there, but it sounds like after an investigation into some misconduct involving the Utah State football team, the decision has been made to put Blake Anderson on administrative leave, and they have informed him of their intent to fire him. So it's a surprising move, and I feel awful for the players on the team that, especially guys that came to play for Blake Anderson or had options to leave and decided to stick around thinking they would get to play for him, and something like this, if it's a legal situation involving misconduct off the field or the way Anderson handled administrative duties, the university really probably doesn't have much of a choice as far as the right thing to do. But it's unfortunate for a lot of players who sort of get caught in the crossfire. They get caught. I get mixed up in a situation where now, hopefully they can weather the storm without Anderson. I know they've made it an interim hire. Nate Dreiling is the defensive coordinator who's been promoted for the 2024 season. And the team's been informed of the news earlier today. We'll see I suppose they all have the option to go into the portal. The entire team would in the aftermath of a coaching change, and so we'll see if anyone from Utah State decides to bail and go and pursue opportunities elsewhere. Utah State opens the 2024 season on August 31st, so it's a heck of a time for a coaching change. But if the results of the investigation required Utah State to make a move, they are in fact making that move. So Blake Anderson out at Utah State after a couple of seasons, and I would imagine that's a coaching search that will get going later this year. Just unusual timing on it. Unless it's a circumstance involving something administrative or something misconduct related, you don't usually see a coaching change made now. I mean, it wouldn't make sense to fire a coach in July because you don't think the season's going well or something. I mean, you'd make that's a time when you do that right after the season or before spring practice, but unless something fairly urgent, you wouldn't make a coaching change like that. And it sounds like something urgent happened at Utah State that required them to move on from Blake Anderson. So it's a surprising piece of news there as a coaching change at the Division I level here in the first week of July. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We're going to talk with Jake Crane in hour number two, previewing the upcoming season. Might do some more Mount Rushmore talk. That was fun yesterday. Mentioning the greatest ever at a position at a school. We had a caller yesterday asking about the top four running backs ever at Auburn, top four defensive linemen at Auburn, stuff like that, and sparked some interesting conversation. A lot of it depends on frame of reference, right? I'm not super equipped to talk about the rosters of the 1960s and 1970s and 1980s the way some other listeners and some other fans might be able to, and I think some other folks may not, they maybe don't have the same appreciation. I mean, I know everybody's like the recent teams, but the point we made yesterday is there are some all-time players you could get who just because the team didn't achieve necessarily. We're talking about the Mount Rushmore conversation as Bill Cameron gets back.
I was thinking about that. Thinking about that yesterday, that'd be something fun to carry on.
Well, but how? And we talked about with Tank Bigsby and Derek Hall, and I think there are probably some players in the Bowden era, or even the tail end of Tuberville, where because the teams didn't achieve at a super high level or fill the trophy case with championships, people may not remember the contributions of key players from that team, which is unfortunate because, more recently, and I'm sure there are players from past eras that you could, is there a great player or two from the Bowden team, especially later Bowden, that you think people may not, I guess people reminisce about Damian and how,
but Damian... you know, Damian played for a team that wasn't terrible, too.
That's true.
I mean, the 98 team, I don't know how many great players were on that 98 team.
Yeah, I mean, and more.
Damian was gone after 97.
More recently, you're right. That'd be there's probably better examples out there. But like more recently, I mean, Damian played SC Championship game.
Right.
You know, it wasn't the devoid of success or anything like that. You've got, I mean, we talked about Tank and we talked about Derek Hall, you know, yesterday as guys who, Marcus Harris, I think would be another example. Like more recently, you know, these guys that were, you know, players that would have fit in on great Auburn teams and just didn't necessarily find themselves in that circumstance while playing here. But yeah, it was fun to reminisce about some names on yesterday's show. I imagine you got everything.
Yeah, I did. I think sorted out to an extent. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like
was there a mix up?
Sort of.
Okay,
there was. They had a lot of information wrong, but I don't think that wasn't really affecting the bottom line. But the information needs to be right. I mean, if you ever have a claim, I mean, you wouldn't want to your car to be in an accident, and then when you take it into the shop, they go, "Well, this isn't the car that's covered." That wouldn't work.
You'd rather not. No, you want. Yeah.
You want to make sure. I mean, you know, if they say, "Wait a minute, it's supposed to be a 4-door SUV, and you've got a 2-door whatever." I mean, you know, 2-door coupe.
Those details can matter.
They do. Yes. They can. Yes. So yeah, had to get that straightened out. But I think everything's fine. All right. So we're continuing here again. Hey, we got quite a few calls yesterday. We'd love for you to join in. Did you give the numbers?
Gave the numbers out as we wrapped up the first
segment. We didn't do that at the top
of
the hour. Again, 334-321-1390. When you call in, again, you're just going to be automatically connected, and then we will get to you as quickly as possible. So be patient with us. We'd love to hear from you. Anything on your mind as we head up to the 4th of July? I mean, it's always in my mind. It's sort of marked. It's the middle of summer, and it's sort of downhill as far as the rest of summer. Fall gets here quickly, it seems like, after the 4th. So we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us as we continue here with the Tuesday Drive.
8275-02 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. A couple of days before the 4th of July, and our next to the last show. I think it was the last show of the week for Jacob. He's headed somewhere tomorrow, so we will be on. Don't be concerned tomorrow. I mean, so the Max Roundtable will be on, and then there will be ESPN for a couple of hours.
2 hours of silence. We're going to do two hours in honor of Jacob.
That's right.
Two hours of just absolute silence, and then we're gonna run the drive.
2 hours of contemplation. That's right. No, that's right. But we'll be back again tomorrow. But we are here today, and we'd love to hear from you. And we have a call right now, I believe, on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number 334-321-1390. And let's go to the phones. And hi, who are we talking to?
It's Jeff, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for calling back today. Yeah, yesterday it was right at the top of the hour, and I just hated for you to only have a few seconds.
Yeah, no problem. I didn't realize when I called. As soon as you said it, I looked at my clock. So no problem. You guys are doing all right?
Yeah. How about you?
I'm good. Trying to stay cool.
That can be a challenge.
Mount Rushmore, you guys were talking about. I know everybody's got that problem, trying to stay cool. Greg Carr. I didn't hear that name.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Oh my goodness. What a tremendous linebacker this guy was.
Number 54. Absolutely. Yes, he was.
The late Greg Carr. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, beyond the academics, people forget he was a 3-time academic All-American.
Oh, yes. And then And then went on to be an orthopedic surgeon.
Yes. He had a short career with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yes,
no
he
doubt.
Did.
Yeah, he was there with Green. He and Kevin Green at the time.
Yeah, he was, and he was much more highly decorated coming out.
Oh my gosh! It's funny. The other night, I watched the '81 Iron Bowl. Believe it or not, and he was a freshman on that team, and he was already getting accolades. that particular year.
It's just wild when you go back and you watch some of those games and look at the size of the shoulder pads. Everybody's shoulder pads. That was an 80s thing though, wasn't it? I mean, women had the big shoulder pads in their clothes, but I mean, no, it's unbelievable the size of those things. And then the he went from tearaway jerseys and giant shoulder pads to the smallest type pads, but they're much safer now. That's what's crazy.
Oh yeah, I miss that era. That was a great era. And speaking of Oklahoma and Texas, growing up, you know, of course I rooted for Auburn, but was nothing bigger than watching that Texas OU game every year. I didn't fully understand it, but that was amazing to watch that game. Keith Jackson called that game every year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
To watch the tearaway jerseys, the tremendous athletes on both sides. Both teams.
Of course, back then, Oklahoma-Nebraska was probably bigger than Oklahoma-Texas.
Yes, I believe. The old Big Eight.
Yep.
Yeah, the old Big Eight time. That was wonderful times. I tell you what, I've been monitoring this Texas OU hoopla the last couple of days. I'm beyond excited.
Oh, I think it is the most significant move that against the additions 30 years ago and a dozen years ago, but I mean to bring in the schools, blue bloods like Oklahoma and I mean Texas, just the name value is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and the thing is, me watching some of the Facebook and some of the social media, their fans are really excited about it. Normally you find Texas come with their level of arrogance, but their fan base seems to be extremely excited about it.
Oh, and I would be too. I mean, if I were a Texas fan or an Oklahoma fan, I mean, granted you might be apprehensive about stepping up the quality of your opponent week to week, for trading in, the other teams in the Big 12 for the SEC. But I think it leads to bigger games. It's going to lead to more interest, and I think it's I would be very excited. It's a little different with USC and UCLA because there's the geographic concerns of what you're leaving behind versus what you already had. That wasn't as pronounced in the Big 12.
No.
I think yes, Texas and Oklahoma will have some. They'll occasionally have some long trips, or people will have long trips to go see them. But it's not as though they feel out of place in the conference whatsoever. I think it's a tremendously exciting move.
Oh yeah. So what do you guys schedule for the next couple of weeks? What do you got going on?
So we're off Thursday, Friday, acknowledging July 4th. We're back next week with a full slate of shows.
Full week, but that is the week before media days. Then Dan will be out in Dallas. Jacob's going to be out there for On the Line. Doug will be out there with a Max Roundtable.
Bill's going to go see Foreigner that week.
That's true. I do have concert tickets for Foreigner at Styx and John Waite.
I hope you can make it back, Bill. I hope you can make it back.
Well, that's what phones are for if I can't.
Well, you enjoy. I don't know what you got planned, but, I know we talked about if you could sprinkle in a little of that old Jim Feist called, man, I would love to hear some of it if you can.
You know who did we'll try to keep that in mind, Jeff. But you know who did you were talking about Doug and
you heard what he's done the last couple of days.
Yeah, Doug's been doing Jim Feist.
Well, I mean, it is that slow time. Really, it's the slowest time of the year as we wait for all the football talk and media days. So what Doug's done the last couple of days as a tribute to Jim. Jim was a huge. A huge Andy Griffith fan. So for the last couple of days, it's been a lot of Andy Griffith trivia that Doug's been doing. It's sort of in honor of Jim.
Now, I'll be honest. Andy Griffith was never my particular old show. I would do I would do very well on like Gilligan's Island trivia.
I've
watched a lot of those episodes. You know, getting ready for school and growing up. I've seen most of them, but I would struggle with a lot of the with a lot of the Andy Griffith stuff. Although I do know, well, you got Gomer and Goober, right? You know, the
Goober came along after Gomer.
Gomer and right. Goober, yeah.
Floyd the Barber, yeah,
Floyd, yeah, hilarious. All right, guys. Well, I just wanted to touch bases. I wanted to do a remembrance of the late Greg Carr.
I think that's sort of a little bit premature. Yeah. Greg Carr, as far as I know, is still around. Mike Colan, of course, passed recently.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything.
I think Greg is still Dr. Greg Carr, yeah. and a practicing surgeon,
I may be wrong with this. Fact check me on that. I believe late Greg Carr, I believe he's deceased. I may be wrong, and God forgive me if I am.
The information I'm looking at says he is currently an orthopedic surgeon in Birmingham.
Yeah, there was an article. What, last year he was nominated for the College Football Hall of Fame, and there's no mention of a passing.
Maybe I got him confused with Kurt Crane. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Kurt is no longer with us, and like I said, Mike Colan, another all-time great linebacker, has passed as well.
All right, guys. Well, anyway, if I miss you before the 4th, enjoy the fireworks.
Happy 4th, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Yep.
334-321-1390.
Mike Colan passed away earlier this year.
Yes,
April.
He did. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Greg Carr is still with us. Right about one thing. He was a great linebacker.
Thank goodness for that. And an accomplished doctor.
Yes.
As well. Another one of these fellows who finds their way into the medical field.
Yeah. Finished medical school while he was playing in the NFL with the Steelers. 334-321-1390. We'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports wise or otherwise. Don't forget, Jake Crane going to be joining us at the bottom of hour number 2. Dan's got a family get together that he's going to head out for.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, might get me on the phone for the first segment of hour number 2, and then you can we'll go from there, and then you can get Jake to wrap things up.
All right. Well, we will get to tell you what, we'll go ahead and get to our final break here of hour number 1. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
Now this important message from Sparky's Fireworks.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here, Drew at the controls. And, we'd love to hear from you. It is not a newsy time in the world of sports.
Tell you what, Bill, we were just talking about a little bit during the commercial break. If you're I'd say if you're near the Gulf of Mexico, probably worth monitoring Beryl. Right now, massive Category 5 hurricane.
It looks okay for folks in the area where most folks that are listening here would go. I mean, from like Gulf Shores on down into Florida, it doesn't look as bad right now. It looks like the western Gulf.
Yes, it looks like
you better be prepared. I mean, if anybody was thinking about going to Cancun or anything, I don't know that trips to Texas, West Texas, or Mexico look very appealing right now.
Yeah, I believe 1 a.m. local time on Friday morning, the storm is projected to be like right over top of Cancun, Mexico, as a matter of fact, and start to make its way into the Gulf of Mexico. We'll see how far north and how far west it could push. But yeah, I would be worried. Houston, Baton Rouge, you know, maybe all the way into coastal Mississippi, you know, depending on how far this thing starts to bend. But there could be some pretty significant severe weather this weekend and early next week on parts of the Gulf Coast. Yeah, it's rare that we're not talking about the Florida Gulf Coast.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's much more. I mean, I was telling you there was a couple of models that have it threatening populated areas in Louisiana. As a matter of fact, New Orleans, Baton Rouge, in the cone of uncertainty there for where this hurricane could go. But a very strong storm that's making its way from the Caymans into the Gulf of Mexico pretty soon. And I would expect us to still maybe experience some of the...
No, I would think you'll get... some. The backside usually gets wet.
Some of the fallout. I know there's rain projected for Auburn in, what, 5 of the next 7 days? I think something like that, according to Apple. So there's a... you know, once we get past July 4th, there's rain projected for most of the next few days for us here locally. Small chance of rain, but still rain nevertheless. So it's I'd say be alert, be aware, and on top of the regular sort of July 4th warning, right? You know, be careful out there with July 4th coming in just a couple of days.
Oh yeah, no question. All right, 10 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, I got a little thing from MLB reminding me to vote. We talked a little bit yesterday about the home run derby and some of the changes that have been made there. What do you think about the new method of selecting all-stars, where we get down to the top two and at each position, then you just vote for one of those two guys? You like that?
You know, I think it's
it sort of prevents somebody from making a big surge out of nowhere there at the end.
No, I mean, I sort of like, you know, a runoff elections, you know, for starters or something like that. You know, it's a way to sort of prevent ballot stuffing for a player, because you'd have to then win another vote. You know, it's not just about winning one election, and maybe you get a different result when all the votes that went to all the other players suddenly have to have to be concentrated among one of the top two. I think it's a unique change. I didn't think that undeserving starters was a huge problem in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game lately, but I suppose
it's happened a few times where fans of one team will just, you know, stuff it, and you'll get more representatives from a team that maybe not the best team in the league.
And this is probably going to prevent something like that from happening, because right, you'll have more variety, more balance.
I mean, all right, so you look here are the candidates that we have to choose from. In the American League,
So do we have the top two now?
We have the top two at all positions. Now, you have Aaron Judge is in because he was a top vote getter in the American League. Bryce Harper is in because he was a top vote getter in the National League. Don't know that Bryce is going to be healthy enough to play in the All-Star game.
No, it doesn't seem like Bryce is back in two or three weeks.
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, the Phillies have said he might be, but there's no reason to rush him back. But all right, so here are your choices for the time being. Here's who you can vote for. In the American League at first base, you can vote for either Vlad Jr. or Ryan Mountcastle.
This is phase two voting. So yes, fans, the top two players at each remaining position have moved on to this round, mm-hmm, and you can choose between one or the other to
right
be the starter.
So it's either Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Ryan Mountcastle at first base. Okay. In the American League. National League, you're not voting for a first baseman because Bryce Harper is in. There will be a replacement and then a backup there. But, all right, second base for the National League, your options are either Luis Arias, who started the season with the Marlins, now with the Padres, or Ketel Marte,
yeah, who's been excellent
of the Diamondbacks. He has been outstanding. 17 homers for Ketel Marte. Yeah. The American League second baseman to choose from are Jose Altuve or Marcus Semien. Marcus Semien not having a great year to this point, hitting .235 with 11 homers. Altuve, I mean,
a lightning rod, though, because of the stuff from the past.
But. All right. At third base for the American League, it's either Jose Ramirez of the Indians or Jordan Westberg of the Orioles. And then the National League third baseman, you'll choose between Alec Bohm, who's having a fantastic year, or Manny Machado,
who's also having a pretty good season.
Well, he got off to a slow start. He's picked it up. He's picked it up recently. But, I mean, Bohm's got much better numbers right now. The shortstops in the National League, Mookie Betts, who will not be available for the All-Star game.
No.
And Trey Turner, who just came back from the injured list.
Yeah. I feel like Trey Turner's probably got a pretty good shot of starting no matter who wins the vote. yep. in this case, because if Mookie Betts is elected as the starter, they'll have to replace somebody.
Trey would be even though
Trey has missed missed a substantial amount of time. Still been one of the better. I'm trying to think of who's been a much better shortstop. Lindor maybe would be.
I got a couple of guys.
You got a couple of guys. So I mean, I would think
Ellie's had a pretty good first half.
Lindor's surged. I do wonder if Francisco Lindor would be a shortstop
is pretty darn strong in the National League. It really is. In the American League, it's pretty darn strong, too. Gunnar Henderson, the former Auburn signee, 26 homers. He's going to be in the home run derby. It's either Henderson of the O's or Bobby Witt Jr. Man, you talk about a couple of dynamic young shortstops there in the American League. You do see the Oriole. I mean, the Oriole fans have done a very good job because they have Ryan Mountcastle. Do they have their entire infield? No, they have first, short, third, and Adley Rutschman is one of the two catchers along with Salvador Perez of the Royals.
Abrams is probably an all-star this year, right? You would think.
I mean, a lot of shortstops
in the National League. You're right.
You got to have a gnat though. That may be his way in. You got to have a gnat, but it could be Finnegan.
Could be Finnegan,
who's having a really, really good year as a closer. All right, the National League
could be Irvin.
He's been
pretty good.
He's been pretty good, but he's not an all-star.
I do wonder if that's it.
I mean, I'd say Finnegan, who's got a 1-something ERA and close to 20 saves. Catchers in the National League are William Contreras of the Brewers and JT Realmuto. So, all right, we run down the outfielders here when we come back in hour number two. Love for you to join in, though. Dan, going to be heading over. You heading to Montgomery?
I am. Yeah, I'm gonna pop into the house real quick and then head down to Montgomery.
All right. Well, come on in and join me here in hour number two. Don't forget, Jake Crane joins in at the bottom of the hour. So stick with us for the second hour of the Tuesday Drive
with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on another typical summer day. Mid to upper 90s and humid, so be careful if you have to be out and about. A reminder that we have today and tomorrow left as far as shows here for the drive this week because Thursday is the 4th of July and we're getting Thursday and Friday off. So, we hope if you're headed out, somewhere that everything goes well for you. Be careful if you're out there. Going to be a lot of folks on the roads. We talked a little bit about the weather with the earliest Cat 5 hurricane in history barreling toward Mexico right now. But you never know, how things go. They generally, at some point, they're going to take that turn toward the northeast at some point. But, I mean, it looks like more headed toward Cancun or West Texas right now. But again, keep an eye out for that. All right, hour number two of the drive. Bill here, Dan, heading out for a family function. So I've got it solo here in hour number two. Jake Crane of Crane & Company will be joining me at the bottom of the hour. You can join in as well, and you can call on the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390. You can text on the drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And that number is 334-564-1840. Southeastern Industrial Contractors also sponsors the podcast of the drive wherever you find your podcasts. And the second hour of the show is brought to you, as always, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. All right, we were talking a little bit about the Major League All-Star game there at the end of last hour, and we've gotten through the catchers, I believe, yes, for both teams. The way it's set up this year is Major League Baseball, you know, had everyone vote, and then the top two vote getters at each position when it are basically in a runoff, and those are your options. You don't have any write-ins. You don't have, you know, you can't vote for the third place finisher, although most likely third place finisher is going to finish is going to make it to the All-Star game. But anyway, we'll talk about the other players that are out there. There are four outfielders can be voted on in the American League because Anthony Judge is already in. Six outfielders in the National League. The outfielders for the American League: Stephen Kwan of the Indians, Anthony Santander of the O's, Juan Soto of the Yankees, and Kyle Tucker of the Astros are your American League outfielders. The National League outfielders, I said again, are six. Nick Castellanos of the Phillies. Not a lot of your normal names you would expect. The only two big names in the National League outfield are Fernando Tatis Jr. and Christian Yelich, because the other outfielders, Nick Castellanos of the Phillies, Teoscar Hernandez of the Dodgers, who has been a really good player, but I mean, he's not, when you just think of, wow, who are the big name outfielders? Brandon Marsh of the Phillies and Jurickson Profar of the Padres. Profar was released a year ago. He's having a great year, though, and deserving to be in the All-Star. And then you have DHs in the American League, Yordan Alvarez of the Astros, and Ryan O'Hearn of the O's. The O's have six or seven guys that are in the final two in the voting. And in the National League, it's either Shohei or Kyle Schwarber for DH. So those are the players that you'll be voting for. Something I wanted to toss out here, and we can continue this one through tomorrow. You know, we've been talking about the Mount Rushmores of different positions and things like that. It got me thinking, why not just let's go a little simpler? It's summertime. It's the it's the time when we were kids, we'd be out playing. And you know, when you're playing sports, you're usually picturing yourself as someone, depending on different sports. I mean, I had different heroes in just about in every sport. So I just thought we'd toss out there for fun. Who was your favorite athlete growing up? Any sport, any level. Who was your favorite athlete growing up? I know we've got a call holding. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it and see who we have. Go ahead. You're on the Drive.
Hey, Bill. This is John out in Little Texas.
Hey, John, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I missed yesterday, so I didn't hear the conversation about great players that people don't really talk about anymore, but all of those guys in the backfield during the Barfield years, you know, the William Andrews, Joe Cribbs, Brent Fullwood, and even James Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of get lost because, I mean, all of those guys were NFL players, and you know, playing today, there's no telling what they could have done, but just on a couple teams that weren't that great. But
you know, I
don't know if anybody put out running backs like we did in those days.
Oh, no, no. As a matter of fact, it sort of started. The very first caller that brought this up was talking about the Mount Rushmore of running backs, and he mentioned William Andrews. And I said, wow, it'd be tough when he was in the same backfield and was more the blocking back for James and Joe, for Brooks and Cribbs.
I think Lehman Bennett was quoted after he got drafted by the Falcons saying it's like going out and getting a Cadillac and finding out it gets 30 miles a gallon.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, well, he was, he hadn't been worn out running the ball. That's one thing for sure at Auburn.
Now, we had those teams, we had some other great players that probably don't go down. Donnie Humphrey.
Yeah, Donnie Humphrey and Freddie Smith are a couple of guys that come immediately to mind.
How about David King?
Oh, you're right.
Hartwell. Him and my buddy Danny Skutak hit about as hard as anybody on the field and off the field. But But no, we had some great teams. And our basketball teams during those Bob Davis years were the same way. You know,
man,
everybody talks about the talent we got now, but when you had Mike Mitchell and Eddie Johnson and Pepto and Miles Patrick and Stan Petkovich,
and yeah, you're not kidding.
Jimmy Kreebeck actually transferred away because he couldn't get on the court.
Yeah, transferred to Texas where he started. Yeah, no kidding.
So, but yeah, those teams all get lost, and the younger fans just don't really realize what we had in those days.
Well, there was. I mean, the thing is, there wasn't the opportunity to be able to see them if you weren't there in person. And if you know, back then when you only had 16 teams in an NCAA tournament, it really prevented the nation from having an idea of the talent that a lot of teams had back then. Now you've got every game's available. You can stream it. You've got social media. I mean, there's so much more immediacy now.
Well, not only were there only, you know, maybe one or two games on a weekend, we were on probation most of those years.
Yeah, that's
right. But, yeah, I heard the conversation earlier. Like I said, I did not hear yesterday, but I was thinking back to those guys. All of those guys were just incredible, but just didn't get the notoriety.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who was the – all right, just – I mean, yeah, Auburn had some really good players. Before Dr. Bob – got the, I mean, that was pretty close to an all-star team that you just mentioned. Remember how they used to warm up with the Sweet Georgia Brown?
Yeah, Miles Patrick.
Yeah.
Miles Patrick did the Maravich drill thing.
Yeah, yeah, it was like the Globetrotters out there warming up with the Sweet Georgia Brown. Yeah, it was crazy.
But we had a few with Bill Lynn as well. I mean, they're, you know.
Yeah, what was the big, Jim Retzik was.
Yes, he was from. Came from Indiana, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he had such a nice shot for a big guy. He was like 6'8", 6'9".
Right, and 6'10", Big Glenn Moon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
might not have been the greatest, but he was a good guy.
No, nah, he was a heck of a rebounder.
We couldn't get big guys for years. Ernie Magri is the only 7-footer I remember.
He was the first. He was the first 7-footer ever at Auburn.
And he was about as slow as I am now.
He had one game, though. He had one game. He had like 33 against Florida.
Right. And as far as tough, I don't know if there's ever been a tougher player in any sport than Wally Tinker. You know, 6'4", and, you know, I think he led Auburn in rebounding and broke Tom Boerwinkle's nose and broke Neil Walk's nose. And
yeah, I heard all those stories. I never got a chance to see him, you know, play in person.
Well, he coached my brother Jim's B team and taught Jim every dirty trick he knew. He taught me every dirty trick I knew, and I taught my brother, every younger brother, every dirty trick he knew. So, you know. So, well, this man has been great listening to you, and keep it up. You're doing a great job by yourself there, Bill.
It's great hearing from you, John. Take care, man.
We'll see you.
All right, 334-321-13. Man, there's some blasts from the past. And yeah, Auburn had some really great players. I'm trying to think. I've got to remember the other guy. Golly, who was some of the other players that were there? Of course, I mean there was John Mingelt. I mean he was great. But I mean Auburn had some other guys that would come along, and it's like you'd feel like, man, if they had a little more help, and that fits very well in with one of the things we were talking about yesterday. Players that sort of get lost in the shuffle because either their team wasn't as good, things just didn't quite work out for them, but they may have been as good or better than some of the players you recall as being all-timers. 334-321-1390. Love to hear from you. Again, one of the things I tossed out, and we'll continue this through tomorrow for sure, and just your favorite athlete growing up. I mean, I remember emulating batting stances or shooting forms or, when I was going to punt, it would be Ray Guy. If I'm going to place kick, I mean, back then it would, you know, you'd have. I recall when the soccer style kickers were first coming in, and I couldn't do that, so it had to be straight on. But you know, when you're running the ball, you'd be, you know, you're a certain running back, or you're catching it. In my case, it was a tight end because I knew I wasn't going to be a receiver. I mean, it's like I was a bigger guy, so it was going to be a tight end. Or you know, I never was that much of a quarterback. I mean, I was bigger, I guess, and it was like, nope, you're going to go out and I could run over some people and some things like that. So it would be, nope, you're going to play either tight end, because I wasn't going to be a lineman. I got to touch the ball some. But I mean, so who were your favorite? Who was your favorite athlete? Your favorite athletes, the guys, you know, you emulated them either in you're shooting for them. You're shooting, you know. You're at the line. You're down one with no time on the clock. You're fouled with no time on the clock. You're going to the line. So whose form are you going to shoot? Or when you're playing a game, you're imagining yourself. I mean, it was hard not to imagine. You know, when you're 6'3", 6'4", hard not to imagine yourself as a Jerry West when I was a kid. And we just talked about him when he passed just in the last couple of weeks. But you know, baseball. I've mentioned this before. I mean, it was. It was definitely Mickey Mantle when I was a kid. You know, who was it when you were first playing, or when you were first watching, who was it that you really liked? I mean, I know at my house, let's see, there were Ken Griffey Jr. posters all over the place. At the house, we've got a couple of Ken Griffey Jr. little figurines. There's a Ken Griffey Jr. ornament. So, I mean, I know that was one there at the house, but love to hear that from you. We'll go ahead and get to our first break. Don't forget, Jake Crane joins us at the bottom of the hour. But until then, the phone lines are open here on the Tuesday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill here in the studio, Drew at the controls. I saw a little note yesterday. We had a caller asking what players for Auburn could possibly be preseason All-Conference. We talked about that a little bit. See that a couple of former Auburn players have been named preseason All-Big 12, Kobe Hudson and Lee Hunter. Kobe had a really good year last year at UCF. Lee Hunter, big defensive tackle. Among the players picked for the preseason All-Big 12 team. So that's interesting, as those guys, of course, followed Gus Malzahn down to UCF. Meanwhile, I know it's been, and we'll talk with Jake Crane about this here in just a few minutes when we have him on. No, it's been a frustrating time. Last week, like I said, as we took off and went down to the Gulf for a few days vacation. I mean, Auburn was on a roll recruiting-wise. They'd gotten the flip of Alvin Henderson from Penn State. They were on the verge. They were just outside the top five. I think they were maybe 5-1 right when Alvin Henderson flipped. They were in the top five. And then some other players committed to other schools, and they dropped a little below that. But since then, you know, Auburn's lost two commitments. Auburn's had two players decommit. And they also have seen some players that they really were very interested in commit to other schools. So, I mean, there's been a bit of a concern lately, you know, wondering what's going on with recruiting. I mean, if signing day were tomorrow or this weekend, then I'd be much more concerned. I'm not saying there's nothing to be concerned about, but it's still a ways till players are going to be signing in December. And Auburn's got, I mean, they had momentum. You're going to have, you know, ebbs and flows. They're going to be you know, surges and times when there doesn't appear to be a lot of momentum, but I wouldn't get overly concerned right now. I mean, it's not great when you see players heading elsewhere, but there's still time. There's still time to get some guys back, to flip some others, to change some minds, to add players. Auburn has 14 commitments. I'm still feeling like I'd be surprised if they're not around 20 when it comes to the start of high school and college football season, which is coming up on, I guess it's just 8 weeks. I think that's right. I think it's we're in the about to be to the in the 50s as far as days till the opening game. So, and then of course Auburn's got Big Cat Weekend. It's a dead period right now. Now that doesn't mean players can't be, you know, talking, or you know, they can Zoom, they can FaceTime, they can whatever. They just can't be any face to face contact. But players can are obviously making a lot of decisions. You're seeing, you know, commitments and decommitments, things like that. But Auburn's got the Big Cat Weekend coming up right after the dead period ends, which is 3 weeks from tomorrow. The 24th is the end of the dead period. And then on the 27th, Auburn will have Big Cat Weekend and a huge group of very, very prominent, very talented kids are going to be in town. So, I mean, unless you see a lot more of them committing elsewhere or decommitting and saying they're not going to come in and then they don't come in, no, don't lose it just yet. But yeah, it hasn't been great news here lately. But like I said, there's plenty of time. All right, anything you want to talk about sports wise? If you want to pass along, who were your favorite players, athletes growing up? We talked a little bit earlier about this. Now, I'd love to get folks' thoughts. Is it just me sort of looking at it through with my perspective, feeling like that Texas is being made a much bigger deal joining the SEC than Oklahoma? And I mean, I understand how important the University of Texas is, the state of Texas is. Look, we had Texas A&M in, but there's no question that this is not going to thrill A&M fans, but I mean, it's just not as big a deal as Texas coming in. But it doesn't appear that Oklahoma is feels like it's that much bigger a deal than, you know, when Arkansas and South Carolina came in, or, you know, it's just a little bit of a surprise to me, because Oklahoma with their tradition, and like we've been talking, Oklahoma's schedule, it is very tough. Now their non-conference schedule, it's not that bad, really. I look at Oklahoma's non-conference schedule. They open with Temple, then they've got Houston and Tulane before they get into SEC play on the third Saturday in September. They host Tennessee before they travel to Auburn. They have an open date before the Red River rivalry, and then they host South Carolina. They go to Ole Miss. Their final non-conference opponent's Maine, so they don't have the most difficult non-conference schedule you're ever going to see. But then they're at Missouri, open date, Alabama, and at LSU. So I mean, that is again quite the challenging schedule. I mean, as you would expect a team coming in, but then you compare it with Texas's. Texas doesn't play an SEC game till the final weekend in September, when they have Mississippi State coming in. They get an open date before they get Oklahoma in Dallas, there for the Red River rivalry. They have Georgia at home. They travel to Vandy. So their first road conference game is in Nashville on the last Saturday in October. Before they then host Florida, go to Arkansas, host Kentucky, and then close out the regular season at Texas A&M. That's probably as soft a schedule as you're going to find anybody in the SEC getting, and it's welcome in, Texas. 334-321-1390, that's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And let's get back to the phone and see who we have. Go ahead, you're on the Drive.
Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Pretty good. Who's this?
Tommy from Montgomery.
Hey, Tommy.
My favorite athlete growing up was probably Julius Erving. He was just so smooth.
Oh, man. Dr. J, yeah, you'd love to be able to float all the way down the lane and do a finger roll the way Dr. J could.
Of course, George Gervin was similar. He's very smooth, too.
Man, that's a couple of ABA guys. Did you like the ABA?
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun, fast-paced. It was fun.
I liked the multicolored ball. I liked the whole thing. I mean, it was so much more fun. It really was. I mean, the NBA now is wide open. It is fun. But back in the day, the NBA was sort of like when the NFL and AFL came along. You had sort of the stodgy old league where, you know, you didn't want to do anything flashy, and then the ABA and the AFL came along, and they were all for adding excitement.
And for great Auburn players for the Mount Rushmore thing, Carl Lawson's got to be up there, a recent guy.
Well, yeah, when you're talking defensive linemen, we were sort of trying to separate it into, I think you should sort of separate it into interior and outside guys, because it's really tough if you lump defensive ends and pass rushers in with the big guys inside.
Yeah, and Jason Miska was probably one of the hardest hitting linebackers we ever had.
Yeah, there's another true middle linebacker.
Yep. All right, Bill, thanks.
Hey, good hearing from you, Tommy. Thanks for the call. 334-321-1390. That's the thing. It's really tough for just about any place to just narrow things down to four. I mean, unless you've had like four just super multi All-American, you know, multi-time All-Americans that were Outland Trophy or Lombardi or Heisman, you know, winners. And that's not normally going to happen. Sometimes it's easier to come up with if you've had Auburn's fortunate to have multiple Heisman Trophy winners, you can go, well, you put all three of those up there. If you know whether they're same position or not, that type thing. But yeah, it's fun talking about, and that's why this is a fun time of year. That's why this is the time of year to do it, because as we said, I mean, there's not as much going on the field, on the court. It's the off season for most sports. All right, we're going to get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins me on the other side. Stick with us for the final half hour of the Tuesday Drive.
At 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in to the final 25 minutes or so of the show here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill here in the studio. Dan had to head out to a family function this evening. He'll be back in tomorrow, but no worries, because we have one of our favorite guys, Jake Crane of Crane & Company, joining me here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Jake, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great, and after finding out I'm one of your favorites, I'm doing even better.
Oh, well, it's, you know, we've known each other for a while, and you do.
That is true. I do have a little bit of a head start.
Yeah, and you know, when we've finally been able to break that shyness and the inability to express yourself, you know, you've been just fine.
Yeah, I know. Ever since I came out of that shell, man, Shutter Island, it didn't work for all of us, but it did for a few of us.
No kidding. So so you've been throwing big parties now that Texas and Oklahoma are in the conference?
Well, look, I mean, Bill, I think it's a great thing for the Southeastern Conference. I mean, if you're going to, you know, take a macro view, a 30,000-foot view, it's, you know, not just in football either. I mean, look what it brings in baseball. I mean, softball, you've officially cornered the market. But it's great for the conference. You know, what I keep telling Texas and Oklahoma fans, because, you know, we have a bunch that listen to the show, and, you know, they'll be like, hey, you know, we know you're from SEC country, you cover SEC a lot. And the thing I tell them is, you know, it's the trick in the SEC is not the one-off win against Alabama or Georgia, or, you know, putting all your eggs in that basket and winning it. It's the grind outside of Vanderbilt each week. I mean, going to Kentucky is incredibly hard. Going to Mississippi State is incredibly hard, and then you play Tennessee at home after that. It's just every week, save one school, you know, you're going to be playing against a roster that has NFL players, and if it's on the road, it's almost guaranteed to be a hostile environment. So I tell them it's the journey, you know, not the peaks. Like, and that's something I think they'll understand soon.
Well, I don't know that Texas will understand it as quickly as Oklahoma will. When you look at you look at Texas's schedule, they only lead the state of Texas twice in conference play, and those are to go to Nashville and to Fayetteville.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, Texas is in a better spot this year than Oklahoma is. Now, over the long term, you know, Oklahoma's been right there with them. They're two big brands. But, yeah, I mean, Texas is entering with high expectations, and they should be with what they return. But, again, it's one thing to say you love roller coasters, but you've never ridden the Hulk before. Like, it's just – it's different. You can be the most prepared team in where you came from. And I'm not saying Texas won't have a huge year or make the college football playoff or even win the SEC. But it's one of those things that until I see you go through it, and therefore I know you understand it, I'm not going to sit here and act like it's just going to be all roses and rainbows.
No, I mean, and Texas fans should realize that. There have been quite a few times when they expected and were expected to be one of the elite programs, and, you know, things didn't go so well for them, coming off a great year last year. But I was asked this on a show yesterday about the hype for Texas this year. Is it as much or at least a good portion of the reason for the hype and the respect for Texas? Not so much the fact that they won as many games as they did last year and they got to the playoffs, or the fact that they went into Tuscaloosa and beat Nick Saban in Alabama last year in Nick's final year?
Well, look, Bill, I think it's multiple things. And again, it's not an irrational thought to think that Texas could do really well, or that Texas could challenge for an SEC and a national championship. That's where they are right now. But let's not act like Texas coming through when they've had the hype is something that's been the regular occurrence over the last 20 years. It actually hasn't been. Outside of the Vince Young years, when you look at it, Texas has really underperformed at a place that is one of the biggest brands in the sport, and coming to the SEC will only help that. But when you look at what they return, again, up front, because I think that's where Texas made their move, and look, they did lose two NFL defensive linemen in last year's draft. That's going to hurt them going into this year, but they still have good players. So, again, I don't think you'd be wrong on either side of saying, hey, Texas, it may be a little bit of a reality check, but they're still good enough to be able to withstand it. And the key may be that Sark's been through it. Right. I mean, Sarkisian, being with Nick Saban in Alabama, he understands what's going to happen. So he can articulate it in a way that's going to be taken by the players that's more serious than any media member or any fan or any family member.
Let's flip to Oklahoma now. Is there a reason why there doesn't seem to be near as much hype about Oklahoma coming into the league? And a lot of that's because the expectations for Oklahoma this year, I'm seeing over-unders of 7.5, 8 for Oklahoma and, you know, 10-plus for Texas, whereas Oklahoma's a team that won 10 games last year and beat Texas. But it doesn't seem like that really matters to a lot of folks.
Well, look, it shouldn't matter, but we've got to be where our feet are, Bill. I mean, look where that quarterback that helped them beat Texas is. He's at Oregon now.
Right.
Right. Look at what Oklahoma, you're starting a brand new quarterback in Jackson Arnold, who I think has a ton of potential. But just like all our audience out there, I've watched football long enough to know that a young quarterback, you're going to go through ups and downs. And you mix that with a struggling offensive line, or at least an offensive line that people are going into the year not feeling great about, including losing Caden Green, you know, your best guard, to Missouri. You don't want to mix a new quarterback and an offensive line that may struggle into the Southeastern Conference for year one. So I think they're going to be pretty good on defense. They return Stutzman. We know how Venables is as a coach. I've got a lot of respect for him. I think he's going to do a better job from a championship standpoint than Lincoln Riley did. But there's a lot more questions and a lot more valid questions, and kind of a deadly mixture of young quarterback and inexperienced or untested offensive line heading into what is the Death Star of the line of scrimmage in the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, and they get an idea right off the bat of what SEC play is all about as their first two conference games are hosting Tennessee and then traveling to Jordan-Hare.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, if we're going to look at Auburn and flip the script on it for a second, Auburn doesn't play Texas. They play Oklahoma week five in what's going to be Jackson Arnold's first road game in the SEC. And when you look at that schedule, first true road game, it ought to be like walking into hell, Bill. That's because Auburn at that point should be 4-0 if they handle business like I think they will and they should, but have a chance to maybe be top 12 in the country, beating an Oklahoma team that, you know, we'll see what happens against Tennessee. You know, that's a game they could very easily lose, but that's Nico's first SEC road game as well, their new quarterback. We're looking at a game that could tilt Auburn's season and be the difference between, you know, not just 7 wins, but 9 wins.
Oh, yeah, and Auburn, the fact that that will be their fifth straight game at home, and as you said, Oklahoma playing Tennessee, they're going to have a physical matchup the week before. Not that Arkansas won't be, but Auburn should have that advantage when Oklahoma, when the Sooners come in town. And that's also going to be, I mean, let's face it, I mean, that is the marquee home game on Auburn's schedule this year.
Without a doubt. But, I mean, if you look at it from an Auburn standpoint, and again, I understand after New Mexico State last year, fans are going to be nervous. And if you're an Auburn fan, you know, you're either dead inside or so nervous inside you're almost dead. So you know what I'm talking about when I say this. But there's no reason why Auburn should not be 4-0, maybe in the top 25, depending on how those four games look, right, going into having Oklahoma at home. We'll see what Oklahoma does with their schedule. But you win that game, now you're 5-0. You go lose at Georgia, which you're probably going to. It's going to be tough at Alabama. That's two right there. You go split one of Kentucky and Missouri on the road and handle business at home. That is a huge springboard year of proven progress going into a schedule the year after that's somewhat manageable as well.
Yeah, that's one thing that we do know. I mean, we already know the schedule, the conference schedule for next year. May not know the dates, but you know you're going to play the same teams. I'm not crazy about that because it's not nearly as fair as a 9-game schedule when you're rotating the same teams in and out, but I understand why they're doing it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it does set up well for 25 when you have a favorable 24 schedule.
Without a doubt. But again, it's the last – you look at the way Auburn's recruiting right now. You look at the way Auburn's aligned right now. You look at the positive momentum. Look, Alabama's going to recruit well. It's going to take years of them struggling for that not to happen, and I don't see that happening under DeBoer. But Auburn is winning battles, and they're in battles for longer than they have been since I can remember, right? Since back when Gus really had it humming, and then it fell off the rails, and we all know the end of that story. But the last piece of the recipe for Auburn to get back to to being able to compete against the best, right, like we're used to, like I feel like Auburn should be, it'll be proved. The last part of that mixture and recipe is on-the-field progress, and you haven't been able to point to that yet. The minute that happens, you blend that with the money that's being pumped into Auburn, with the new facility, to what this staff, how they're recruiting, what they're telling other recruits, we're going to be good again, I promise. To me, then all of a sudden, that's a machine that you can start to build up and legitimately have a chance every time toe meets leather.
Talking with Jake Crane of Crane & Company here on the Tuesday Drive. And, Jake, I was just talking about one of the things that you were mentioning there, because there's some hand-wringing, there's some angst. Because things were going so well up until late last week. I mean, Auburn had flipped Alvin Henderson. They were up to 16 commits. They touched the top five, and then some players started committing elsewhere. Auburn had a couple of decommits, a couple of players they were recruiting committed elsewhere. And you know, there's some folks now that are wondering, oh, what's going on? The Pets' heads are falling off. What are we going to do? And I was just talking about this a few minutes ago. I mean, it's still a long way till December. You've still got Big Cat Weekend. It's a dead period coming up now. But you're absolutely right. In addition to that, you've got an opportunity to show some things on the field. I believe Auburn will regain the momentum here at the end of this month when you see Big Cat. But they have that great opportunity, proof of what they're preaching on the field as they start that 5-game home stretch to begin the season.
Yeah. Well, the best way I can explain it, it's one of the smartest coaches I ever worked for, the way he explained recruiting to me. And now, you know, with the craziness it's added, it's even more true. Recruiting is like a political campaign, right? that mm-hmm. starts over a year. There's going to be ups and downs, but the difference is how high are your ups and how down are your downs. And it's not, you know, one snapshot in time, but then you get a chance to perform in front of everybody, and how you perform is really going to dictate how you do in that area in recruiting. And it's 100% true. Just think about it like this. Yes, there have been some down moments, but Auburn hasn't had the highs that they've had in a long time. They've been running the marathon, but it's been a lot of lows and not a lot of highs, and even the highest of highs weren't super high. Now the highest of highs are back to where, you know, Auburn fans back in the heyday remember when we were recruiting at our fullest. So, again, the on-the-field performance, that's what is going to matter. When you get your chance to show that the magic trick that you've been selling is real, you got to make sure you land the trick. And I think that's what Auburn's going to do this fall. That's the last piece of this ingredient. Big Cat will be great because these guys are genuine recruiters. But the minute the on-the-field success somewhat mirrors what's being talked about off the field, Auburn will get its swag back to its highest level and be able to go out there and compete at the highest level. Until that happens, it's just going to be ebbs and flows, but I'm so glad the highs we have now are so much better than the highs we had before then.
Oh, it's not even close. Hey, before we run out of time, I guess we'll get an opportunity to talk to you again before everybody heads out to Dallas. But while we were talking about Texas and Oklahoma coming in yesterday officially for their first day in the SEC, it's really interesting. I mean, you look right now, the three teams, I think it's going to be Georgia, Texas, and probably Alabama, wouldn't you think, are going to be the top three teams that are predicted by the media out in Dallas?
Yeah, and that's how it should be. I mean, that's what it's looking like right now. I don't think there's, you know, any crazy argument against it. Not that you couldn't maybe slide a couple other teams up there. I think Missouri and Ole Miss mm-hmm. are awfully interesting. But if you're Missouri and Ole Miss, if you're Lane Kiffin or if you're Eli Drinkwitz, please don't vote us in the top three. Keep us as far behind as possible. It's a free chip on the shoulder card. So, you know, again, that's probably what it's going to be because that's probably what it needs to be.
And one of the main reasons is because of the guys that are, taking the snaps there at quarterback with Carson Beck and Jalen Milroe and Quinn Ewers. Who do you think, I said yesterday, because Media Days is in Dallas, I think Quinn's going to be your preseason SEC quarterback. Who do you think?
I think it's going to be Carson Beck because, you know, most guys know he has the best team around him. Now, will people vote just because it's in Dallas uh-huh. and, you know, to create headlines and clicks and all that?
Now, there's probably going to be more Texas media there since it's in Dallas.
Yeah, that's and that's true. Like, it's a home game for sure. But at the end of the day, when I look at it, you know, and listen, I want as many clicks as possible. I want as much engagement as possible. But I don't know how you don't look at those three and say, all right, I feel the best about Carson Beck. A guy that's proven, not only that, he has the best machine around him. Not that Texas isn't good around Quinn Ewers or that Alabama isn't good around Jalen Milroe, but when you look at stability, right, with what Georgia has coming back, with the way they've recruited, with what they've added in the wide receiver room with Dominic Lovett, compared to the change we've seen at Alabama, which is mm-hmm. you know, the greatest head football coach of all time stepping away, and then you look at Texas entering the SEC in year one, and Quinn Ewers hadn't been able to stay healthy for a full year the past two seasons. To me, I think Carson Beck makes the most sense.
Well, I said yesterday, that's who I would pick. I just have a feeling that we may see the media, which is probably going to be pretty heavily Texas, go with Quinn. But whatever, it's going to be great out there. Jake, just about out of time. Let everybody know what you got going on at Crane & Company.
Yeah, well, we're counting down the days. I mean, y'all know it's about that time. So if you love college football, we had Tim Brando on today, talked a lot about it. You know, go to YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N-N Company. And come hang out with us. We got it covered.
All right, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Great having you on. Have a great week.
Hey, you guys as well.
All right, Jake Crane joins us as he does every Tuesday at 5:30. It's wishful thinking. Thursday we won't be on the air, so it doesn't really matter. No, every Tuesday at 5:30. We'll get to our final break here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Stick with us.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes here on this Tuesday afternoon. Our thanks to Jake Crane of Crane & Company joining us. And if you missed any of that or any of the shows, you can check them out on our podcast, which are sponsored by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And you can check them out wherever you find your podcasts. I got a correction. Sorry about that. When I was talking with John, he probably was like, yeah, I lost my mind. The Auburn pregame warmups back in the days of Dr. Bob Davis with Miles Patrick handling the ball and dropping it off and things like that felt like the Globetrotters warming up. That's where I was getting the Sweet Georgia Brown, but it was way too outdated for those days even. Floyd reminding me that it was TSOP by MFSB, and that's the old the Soul Train music, and TSOP was it was the Sounds of Philadelphia, and MFSB was Mother, Father, Sister, Brother, the old Soul Train. But man, what a show that was back in the day. I mean, it was fun to watch the game, but I mean the pregame, the warm up was just crazy, and yes, what an extremely talented team Auburn had for a little while. I mean, you had Eddie Johnson and Pepto-Bolden were joined by, the Mike Mitchell and Miles Patrick and Stan Petkavich and Jim Krivax, and man, was Redding there as well? I mean, man, what a talented basketball team. And Auburn was a team that should have made the NCAA tournament. Like I mentioned a while ago, I think only 16 teams made it. And I was working when this was crazy how much different it was. The NCAA tournament field was announced like at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And we would run news at the top of the hour, followed by World of Sports. And I can hear Lou Boda and the little stinger coming on. And he mentioned on his one of the first stories he had was that Auburn did not make the field, and a very deserving team did not make the field, the NCAA tournament. Yeah, so fun stuff today. Dan will be back in tomorrow. It'll be our final show for the week as we take off for the 4th of July holiday. So hope you will join us then. But we're out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.